Okay, tonight, Nehemiah chapters 5 and 6, as we finish out the section on the building of the walls in Jerusalem. Remember, Nehemiah came with a conviction, with a commission from King Artaxerxes to build the wall around Jerusalem. What is interesting about the text is that people make a big deal about the building of the wall, but the building of the wall is just incidental. It's how the wall got built. The wall itself served as a physical barrier, but really not a spiritual barrier. And as we'll see in the dedication of the wall in a few chapters, it'll be dedicated. But really, it's the people involved. And in fact, the chapters tonight, chapters 5 and 6, is really focused on Nehemiah and how Nehemiah handled the attacks against him as he set his heart to do the Lord's will. Now, this is very interesting. Up to now, you remember, he started building. We had three people come up to him and try to hinder the work that the Lord wanted him to do. They did two things. First of all, they mocked him. That is, laughed at him. Secondly, they ridiculed him. And when this didn't work, and remember how Nehemiah responded to the challenge and to the trial, he didn't talk back to them. He didn't threaten them. He just prayed. He prayed over two things. And this is the way Nehemiah prays. He prays, number one, he prays heavy prayers against his enemies. Don't forgive them of their sins. Lord, hold them to their sins. Lord, wipe them out. Just take care of it. I mean, he doesn't just commit him to the Lord. He prays, basically he prays for the Lord to do what he would have done. And he didn't get involved, you know. And secondly, he prayed for himself. Just strength to do what? To continue with the work. You don't know what this book, as us going through it, means to us. And of course, none of this is by accident that we all go through. The Lord has things that he wants us to do. And Satan's devices, Paul talked about not being ignorant about Satan's devices. Satan will attack us from outside. He will ridicule us. He'll laugh at us. People will attack us in various ways. And it's all for one reason: to keep us from doing what the Lord wants us to do. And the thing about Nehemiah is it's how we as Christians ought to respond to Satan's attacks. I do not always respond the way I should. When people attack me, I attack them. And the thing that I try to do is attack them with a greater attack than they attack me, so they never do it again. They learn their lesson. But Nehemiah has showed me that you ask for strength, you just keep your eyes on what the Lord wants you to do. You don't let anything distract you. Nehemiah, we'll see tonight that the building of the whole wall took 52 days. That's it. And as we saw last week, they worked day and night to the point that they didn't even take their clothes off except to wash their clothes. I mean, they are really working at it here because of the enemy. Now, that's focus to me, see. But Satan attacked them from without. But today, in our chapters, Nehemiah 5 and 6, now we see Satan attack from within. You know the old adage, if they can't defeat you, they'll join you. In fact, it's supposed to be the other way around. If you can't defeat them, join them. That's usually what the ministry does today. You can't defeat the world, so just give in. You know, don't stand alone. It's too hard. But it is interesting that that's what Satan does. Do not be ignorant of Satan's devices. He'll attack from without. And if he can't get to us from without, he'll get to us from within. And that's what we're going to see tonight. Now, when people make commitments to the Lord's work, it causes problems. While they were committing themselves to get this wall done in 52 days, everything else was neglected. They had to pay taxes to the Persian government. They had their own families to take care of. They left off from doing that for almost 2 months. All the expenses started to pile up. In fact, these, you know, in order for the food to be there for the people, they had to work the farmland. Nobody worked the farmland. Now there was a famine. There was a food shortage because nobody worked the farms. They were too busy building the walls. And plus they had to sell their lands, and even some had to sell their daughters and sons into slavery just to pay for the taxes and pay to keep themselves above board so they can commit themselves to building this wall, because they couldn't do the work to keep this process going. So they come to Nehemiah and complain. That's where we're at tonight. Chapter 5, and there was a great outcry of the people and their wives against their Jewish brethren. For there were those who said, here are the different complaints. We, our sons and our daughters are many. Therefore, let us get grain that we may eat and live. We don't have any. See, they haven't been farming the land. There were also some who said, we have mortgaged our lands and vineyards and houses that we might purchase grain because of the famine. So they couldn't grow it, so they had to mortgage their homes in order to import food from other places. There were also those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our lands and vineyards. And the worst thing about it is, you know who they borrowed money from? The leaders in Israel that had money, and not only did they have money, but we saw in chapter 4, they wouldn't work. They were some of the leaders. Well, what was interesting is they sat back and didn't work, and they also kind of licked their chops and said, oh, my brethren needs money. We just open up a little lending institution and charge them interest. And so what choice do they have? So they borrowed money from their own brethren, Jewish brethren. And their own Jewish brethren charged them interest for the loans. Verse 5. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children. And indeed we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. And some daughters have been brought into slavery. It is not in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards. So instead of selling their land or putting their land for some kind of collateral to buy their children back, they can't even do that because every possession they have is tied up in some kind of a business deal just to survive. And they come and complain because they've committed themselves for 52 days to building the wall. And now there's problems. See? Verse 6, and I became very angry when I heard their outcry and these words. Now the anger wasn't because they experienced problems in committing themselves to the building of the wall. What made him angry was that his brethren who had the money loaned them money and charged them interest just to make money off of them, taking advantage of their own brethren's situation. After serious thought, now remember, we are studying not the building of the wall, we are studying Nehemiah. Okay? Nehemiah is a man who has been commissioned by God to accomplish a work. He is focused. His response, first of all, he listened. Second of all, it says in verse 7, after serious thought, literally in the Hebrew text, he says, contemplation ruled in his heart. Isn't that interesting? Meditation and contemplation ruled in his heart. So he didn't, again, here's a man who didn't, he was angry, but he didn't respond out of anger. He allowed meditation to rule in his heart. So this apparently is a very basic rule of Nehemiah. First of all, to listen, be quick to hear and slow to speak, as James says. He meditated on it. He thought about it before he responded. After serious thought, I rebuked the nobles and rulers and said to them, each of you is exacting usury. That's money with interest from his brother. So I called a great assembly against them. And I said to them, according to our ability, we have redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. Now indeed, will you even sell your brethren? It's kind of interesting principle in parallel. If they have been redeemed from Babylon and brought back to the country, is it so that they could hold each other in bondage now? They're brethren. We as Christians The Lord has set us free. He has saved us and set us free. And yet how we keep other Christians in bondage. Maybe even worse than the sin that had them. You know, we legalize things and hold people in such bondage. It says here, we have redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. For indeed, will you even sell your brethren? Or should they be sold to us? Then they were silenced and found nothing to say. Then I said, what you are doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? Now that's the key. That is the theme of Nehemiah's life. The fear of the Lord. He is telling them, do you not have any fear of God in what you're doing? Do you not fear the consequences? We will see that Nehemiah, after these two chapters tonight, that Nehemiah is a man who in everything that he did it in consideration of the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the writer of Proverbs says in Proverbs chapter 1. Fear of the Lord. He says to them, this is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God? Because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies. So he says, you know, the Lord God, he can bring in the enemies, you know. Haven't you experienced that before? The history of our people have experienced this. Verse 10, I also with my brethren and my servants am lending them money and grain. Please let us stop this usury. He's talking about this money-making, lending money for profit. He says, we, my family, and we're going to see in a moment that Nehemiah is going to be revealed to us in our text tonight that Nehemiah is the governor of Judah by this time, and he will govern Judah for 12 years as governor, not as king, but as governor. And it is interesting, he's going to present the fact that he refused to take the governor's wages. He refused because of the plight of his people. He saw all of his people being struck in famine without food and without money. And he basically said, just because I'm governor doesn't mean that I take my money and leave my brethren without money. So he says, let's stop this. Restore now to them, even this day, their lands, their vineyards, their olive groves, and their houses, also a hundredth of the money and the grain, the new wine and the oil that you have charged them. So he charged them 1% interest. Give them their interest back too. Give them everything plus the interest that they charged. Just give it back to them. Close down business. No more banking. Just give it to them for free. So they said, we will restore it and will require nothing from them. We will do as you say. Then I called the priests and required an oath from them that they would do according to this promise. Interesting. He just didn't take their word from it. He made them take an oath. He made them put it in writing that this was going, and this is a good administrative work for a governor to do. He says, we're not going to make this street talk. We're going to make this official business. That these types of transactions and things are no longer going to be going on. Then I shook out the fold of my garment. And basically in those days, in order to for pockets, they would actually pull up the robes and make the fold of the robe like a pocket. If they were going to go down to the marketplace and someone was going to give them grain, they just pull up the fold of their garment. They pour the grain right in the fold of the garment and then they take it home that way. He shook out the fold of his garment and said, so may God shake out each man from his house and from his property who does not perform this promise. Even thus may he be shaken out and emptied. And it would be equivalent to us taking our pockets out and shaking them empty and saying, may God do this to the person who does not keep this promise. May everything that he possesses and everything that he have be emptied out. And all of the assembly said, Amen. Amen is the Hebrew word that means let it be, so be it. And praised Yahweh. Then the people did according to this promise. Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor, here's where we get the information that Nehemiah was appointed their governor at one time, in the land of Judah, from the 20th year until the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, so for 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the governor's provisions. So as governor, he was allotted food money. He wouldn't take it, because he refused to live any better than the rest of his people. But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine besides 40 shekels of silver. Yes, even their servants bore rule over the people, but I did not do so because of what? The fear of God. Not because he says I'm a good man. The only reason he did this is not to be a martyr, to be sacrificial and to be a martyr and say, oh, look what I've done. It's because he feared God. If he should be better off than the brothers around him who are suffering, he feared what God would do to him if he did not respond. James talked about this in James chapter 2. He says, if you see your brother in need and you have the ability to take care of that need and you withhold, then how can you say you are of the faith? And then he went into the discussion, faith without works is dead. So Nehemiah says, how can I live better than the other people around me? How can I? I refuse to take the governor's provisions. So basically he ate what everybody else ate, and if other people didn't eat, he didn't eat. He could have. And even the governors before him misused their position and even took money and food from the people. Nehemiah wouldn't do that. Verse 16. Indeed, I also continued the work on this wall, and we did not buy any land. All my servants were gathered there for the work. Interesting. He didn't take the governor's provision and he didn't buy any land. He refused to buy the people's lands. He would rather give them the money or give them the food. He said, I won't take your land. You keep your land. I don't want your land. I'm not going to take advantage of your situation. And at my table were 150 Jews and rulers besides those who came to us from the nations around us. Now that which was prepared daily was one ox and six choice sheep. Also fowl were prepared for me, and once every 10 days, an abundance of all kinds of wine. Yet in spite of this, I did not demand the governor's provisions, because the bondage was heavy on this people. What he's saying? He had 150 people eat in his home. He could have said, you know, as governor, I need to entertain these people, so I need an entertainment allowance. Not only did he not take for himself, but out of his own pocket, he fed the 150 people every single day. Wow. Yet with all of this, he still did not take the governor's provision. Now notice verse 19. Here's Jeremiah's prayer. Remember me, my God. Remember me for good, according to all that I have done for this people. That's the fear of the Lord. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's what Jesus said. Nehemiah is saying, I want the Lord to help me. And we dictate to the Lord how He helps us by how we help others because of the fear of God. Nehemiah says, I fear God. I want God to help me. So if I have an abundance, I want to make sure that my brethren are taken care of. Secondly, chapter 6. Now it came to pass when Sanballat, Tobiah and Geshem the Arab. Now these are the three people that opposed Nehemiah and the work that the Lord wanted him to do. And the rest of the enemies heard that I had rebuilt the wall and that there were no breaks left in it, though at that time I had not hung the doors and the gates. That Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together amongst the villages in the plains of Ono. but they thought to do me harm. So I sent messengers to them saying, oh no, no. It's in the plain of oh no, and basically Nehemiah says, oh no. He says, I am doing a great work. Now the word great, gadol in Hebrew, doesn't mean great like I am doing something great and I can't take the time for you. The word great means large. I'm doing a large project here and I cannot take time out to come and meet with you. The Valley of Ono was a little more than 25 miles away. And the enemies of Nehemiah wanted him to come and talk. Hey, let's talk about this. Nehemiah says, I can't go. I can't come. I know that they wanted to do me harm. And I couldn't take time out from... this project is too big. No distractions from what the Lord wanted him to do. I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and go down to you? But they sent me this message four times. And I answered them in the same manner. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me, as before, the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand. Interesting, the term open letter means unsealed. Now here's the point. The point of the text is that the letter was not really intended for Nehemiah. It was an open letter, and he was going to accuse Nehemiah of things, but he left it unsealed so that every single person who handled it and unrolled the scroll could read it and read about the accusations against Nehemiah and make Nehemiah look like a bad guy. So Sanballat sent an unsealed letter so that everybody would read it. And here's the way it was written. It is reported amongst the nations, and Geshem says, that you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you are rebuilding the wall that you may be their king. Oh boy, here we go. You're building the wall so that you can lock yourselves in and rebel against everybody. And secondly, so that you can make yourself king. And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. Now these matters will be reported to the king. So come, therefore, and let us consult together. So basically what he's saying is, come and let's talk it over, because I hear that you are rebelling against the Persian king and against the country of Persia, and I hear that you're setting yourself up as king, and you have false prophets going around prophesying that you are the king. Totally untrue. But you can imagine, this is an open letter. You can imagine how many people have read this thing by the time it gets to Nehemiah. And you can imagine what they think about Nehemiah. All of a sudden, they're starting to second-guess their own leader. See? Remember what I said to you. Satan will attack from outside, then he attacks from inside. Then I sent to him, saying, no such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart. For they all were trying to make us afraid. Interesting. Nehemiah had the fear of the Lord, but Satan was trying to install fear in the people. Trying to make us afraid, saying, their hands will be weakened in the work and it will not be done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Isn't that interesting? After all of this, what does Nehemiah say? First of all, his answer is, there isn't anything that you have said in your letter that's true. None of this is being done. And then what does he pray? Lord, strengthen my hands. He says, I'm moving on. Strengthen my hands that I finish the work. Isn't that interesting? He stopped for a couple of minutes to answer and didn't even bother to defend himself. Just said, this is not true. And then just moved on. Lord, strengthen me. Let's go. Let's finish this thing. Verse 10. Afterward, I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was a secret informer. Now, the term secret informer in Hebrew literally means was a shut-in. So different English translations say that he was closed in, he was locked up, because the word means literally to withdraw. And so some people translate it as somebody who is secret, somebody who is withdrawn, or even somebody who has been locked up. Shemaiah, who was a secret informer, and he said, "Let us meet together." By the way, this guy is a false prophet. He says, "Let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night they will come to kill you." So he says, they're going to come and kill you, so go in the temple, because there they can't take you out, and you can hide there and be safe. And I said, "Should such a man as I run?" Doesn't mean such a man as I'm a big man. It means me in a position of responsibility and leadership. Should I run and hide to be safe? I'm the one that says you need to trust the Lord. You're telling me to run? "And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his own life? I will not go in." So basically he says, if it was for the purpose of saving my own life, I wouldn't go in there. If I have to lose my life, I have to lose my life. The Lord has something for me to do. "Then I perceived that God had not sent him at all." It is interesting that depending on what answer you give to people, it reveals from those people whether they've been sent by God or not. Obviously, he was sent by Sanballat to again try to trick him and go hide, and so that they can come in and say, "See your leader? He's hiding. He's trying to save his own skin. What we told you was true. He's trying to become king. He's not a servant of God at all. Why is he hiding in there?" See? And the indications are from the Hebrew text that they were trying to get him to hide in back of the Holy of Holies, where even a priest who was not qualified could not go. So they were trying to get him to go into the secret places of the temple where not even a priest could go during this time of the year, so that he could save his own skin. See, they could say, "See, he's trying to save his own skin. He's violating the word of God. I mean, you know, what kind of a leader is that?" So they tried to embarrass him. So he says, "I perceive that God had not sent him at all, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason, he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way and sin, so that they might have cause for an evil report, that they might reproach me." Now look at this prayer. "My God, remember Tobiah and Sanballat according to these their works, and the prophetess Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets who would have made me afraid." So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul, which is late September for us, in 52 days. Wow. Quite a project. I noticed that the wall outside down by the freeway for the new shopping center is taking more than 52 days. This is the Great Wall at Jerusalem, working round the clock. And isn't it interesting that Nehemiah basically said, "Lord, strengthen my hands." Nehemiah took a minute off to pray about certain people and then just kept moving on. Kept focused on what the Lord wanted him to do and committed people to the Lord. He just said, "Lord, just take care of these rascals." So it was finished. He finished it, but not without challenge, in 52 days. "And it came to pass when all our enemies heard of it, and all the nations around us saw these things, that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God." Now that's the reason why you push on. That's the reason why we are not to give that much time and attention to the enemies. It's because when the project is finished, even the enemies are going to have to admit that the work is a project of God and not man. "Also in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came to them. For many in Judah were pledged to him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah, and his son, Jehohanan, had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, back in chapter 3. I think it's verse 4 that Meshulam is mentioned as a worker on the wall. Now, what is interesting here is Tobiah married into the leadership of the Jews. He married a daughter. Therefore, there were those within the Jewish community in the leadership that were pledged to Tobiah, and they were constantly sending him letters telling him everything Nehemiah was doing. So you talk about undermining his leadership. The enemy married one of the daughters of the leaders, and they kept giving him information about what Nehemiah was doing. Verse 19, "And they reported his good deeds before me, and reported my words to him. Tobiah sent letters to frighten me." Undermining, talking to people, trying to scare them, basically. It's fear. And just seeing the courage of Nehemiah, uncompromising, he refused to be afraid. He said, "They're just trying to get me to be afraid." But basically, Nehemiah's message is, the secret to Nehemiah's life is he was governed by the fear of God. That's the secret to Nehemiah's life. He would not retaliate against his enemies because he feared the Lord. He would not compromise because he feared the Lord. He would not take advantage of his brothers because he feared the Lord. Everything in his life was governed by his fear and respect of the Lord, because he knew the Lord was going to hold him responsible. And the Lord was going to deal with him, and he did not want that to happen. Next week, chapter 7 and 8, as we continue on reading about Nehemiah. Quite an example for us. We're told by Peter that the Lord has left us an example that we should follow his footsteps, and these Christian brothers and sisters have left us an example of how to handle the enemy and how to handle trials, is to keep focused on what the Lord wants us to do. If people say whatever they say, pray against them, pray for them, commit them to the Lord, and keep moving on. Don't even give them the time of day. That's what Satan wants. So all Satan wants to do is distract from the Lord's work. That's it. And if you're like me, or even a percentage of what I'm like, I take things personal and I'm ready to fight because I know I can win. And that's the problem. If I get into a fight, I know I can win. So I always want to, if somebody wants to say something against me, I always want to confront them. But that's Satan's. Satan has defeated me just in getting my attention away from what the Lord wants me to do. See? There's never any fight, because that's not Satan's intent. His intent is distraction, to take up time from finishing the Lord's work and doing what the Lord wants us to do. That's what it's all about.
And the Lord always has a bigger shovel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's for sure. Let's close with prayer.